You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. It is episode 202 on the 1st of March. I am Nick Knack, as always. I am here with my good friend Mark.
Hello.
And Garth, what is on the show this evening?
Well, it is episode 202, and it is thank you to Area 52, but tonight... Oh my goodness, Nick Knack, do you have to sit down?
Yes.
Because what we have been playing this week is nothing short of one of the hottest games out there that is all about miniatures and feudal Japan mushed together.
It could be anything.
And then, Mark, you're going to tell us again, is there anything on Kickstarter that we need to back lately?
So many things, Garth. So many things.
Oh, Nick Knack's money.
And, of course... We have to talk about this BorderCon competition, which is only going to go for a little bit longer. So if you want the chance to win a ticket or two tickets to get to BorderCon 2018 that is happening in Albury over the Queen's Birthday long weekend, you better get your entries in quick because you are running out of time.
Indeed.
So that's what we've got coming up on episode 202. Thanks, Area 52, again, for sponsoring us for most of the episodes that we've ever done. We better throw to a song. Is that right, Nick Knack?
Yes, throw to one of those kicking jams.
And then we will come back and fill your oral holes with everything Rising Sun.
Nice.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh here, and that was Heart Beach with Away. The show this evening proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. Go in there and buy all the board games like the ones we're about to tell you about. Now, Garth.
Yes.
I went to Japan last year. It was good. There was nothing feudal going on at the time.
Really?
Well, kind of. A little bit.
Okay.
Hang on. You told me about those two guys in the market. Yeah. That sounded like a feud.
Well, they had that coming to them, but that's beside it. That's because I looked like a Yakuza, but that's beside the point.
And didn't you dress up as a Japanese dragon? Or was that your wife who dressed up as Yoshi?
She dressed up as Yoshi, but we're not going to speak about that.
Okay, that stayed on.
We're not going to speak about my birthday present. Anyway, anyway, Garth, it's the biggest game to come out this year so far in the board gaming world. What are we talking about?
We are talking about Rising Sun.
Wow, wicked.
By one young Mr. Eric M., which stands for miniatures, Lang.
I have not heard of him. Has he done anything else?
Well, yeah, look, he might have done The Godfather, Corleone's Empire. He might have done the recent Song of Fire and Ice miniatures game that Kickstarter backers haven't received yet. He might have done the others.
Oh, the one we did the playthrough video for on YouTube.
Yeah, the one that I didn't play because I wasn't invited to that.
And Trent definitely understood the rules.
Yeah. He might have done a little game called Blood Rage, which would be known as the loosely the prequel to Rising Sun, I guess.
Yes,
you would say there's Chaos in the Old World, there's Star Wars games, there's Dice Masters, there's XCOM the board game.
So what you're trying to tell me is he's done another game.
He's done another game, and stop the presses, it includes some form of plastic in it.
Crazy talk.
I know. So thanks, Eric, for filling all of our rooms with plastic. And thanks, Come On Games, or Simon Games, as they are affectionately known, or Cool Mini or Not Games, for creating an insert that you will only ever be able to take the miniatures out of once and then never be able to put them back in again.
Really? Was it? I hadn't paid any attention.
Well, we played Trent's copy because where's your copy?
My copy is still in the distribution center somewhere in America because apparently I didn't fill out the pledge manager, apparently, even though that came out 6 months ago and they neglected to tell me about it.
Apparently. Or allegedly, as they say in the world of not paying out. Come on. Yeah. So, Rising Sun is set in mythical feudal Japan.
Yeah.
Well, no, hang on. It's not mythical because there was a feudal Japan, wasn't there?
Not with massive, massive monsters and miniatures.
Garth, those monsters are real.
Yeah, like, were you there?
Yeah, we've seen the movies.
All right.
Yeah. Remember those
Rising Sun is an accurate historical description
Thank you.
Of feudal Japan.
Mm-hmm.
in which up to six competing tribes, colonies, clans, as they call them in the game, vie for complete and utter control of Japan, where the, in typical Japanese feudal style, the player with the most victory points wins. Now, you'll immediately go, yeah, I know feudal Japan, and I know Godzilla is absolutely historical fact. But what you will not know is that in not mythical feudal Japan, honour was a very important part of day-to-day life, especially when you were going to fight each other with these completely historically accurate monsters.
Yeah.
Now, honour is something that the dice men know not really much about.
Oh, no. Come on.
But it is a game in this case where a lot of it was talked about being honour. Mm. Honour is this big thing in this game.
The Bushido Code is all about fighting honourably and living honourably. And
sounds like you just made up some words. Bushido, is that real?
Yeah, you Google it.
Yeah, wow. So Rising Sun by Eric Lang is, yes, an absolute massive game. And if you are one of the thousands of Kickstarter backers who pledged millions of dollars to get this game, including all the expansions...
That expensive compared to their zombie sides and their massive darkness one and stuff that they were all hundreds and hundreds. I think everything you can get everything in this entire game. I think it was for just under or around $200, which for what you get ain't bad.
No, it's not if you get it, Leon. But it does come with a couple of expansions inbuilt, including a Kami expansion and a few additional clans that you wouldn't have got in the otherwise base game in the retail edition.
Yeah.
But it was an incredible success, which Come On Games are used to.
A little bit.
So this game, they say it's a spiritual successor to Blood Rage.
Mm-hmm.
Come On try and sell it as more of a modern version of diplomacy and really try and focus on the negotiations, the making and breaking of alliances, and obviously the war that then goes ahead with that. But is it?
Yeah.
We'll see. Now, I'm under very clear instructions by the dice men not to rattle on about the rules in this because we're going to talk about it. So I'm going to give you the very short version of the rules in this game. Is that okay, Mark?
Garth, before you do,
okay.
I'd just like to put a slight correction.
Okay.
So it's not a Bushido isn't... Well, there's no Bushido code as such.
Correct.
But Bushido, according to Wikipedia, is a Japanese collective term for the many codes of honour and ideals that dictated the samurai, blah, 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 the samurai way of life, loosely analogous to the concept of chivalry in Europe.
Do you want to do the same search and see whether Godzilla really existed in non-mythical feudal Japan?
We don't have to. We know that one already.
Let's just trust Wikipedia and move along.
Okay, so in this game, each player will play one of the potentially eight clans. Now, there are eight clans, but only ever six players at any given time. Each of these clans has a starting honour, which is quite important because it determines how everyone sits around the table.
Mm-hmm.
It'll determine the kind of actions that people are going to play at least very early on in the game and the colour that you're going to be.
I do like that it determines how you sit around the table because very few games do anything to do with that, and often you get the couple sitting next to each other, the best friends sitting next to each other, the people that haven't played before probably in one corner and whatever else, whereas this gives the people no choice but to kind of split up if you do the characters in a random way.
As long as you know that before everyone sits down to play.
Yeah, it would have been good if we
because there is so much plastic that if everyone just chooses a colour, sits down in front of them and then looks at all their delicious minis, they're going to have to move around because it is critically important. So you've got the Koi clan, which are red, you've got the Bonsai, you've got the Dragonflies, the Turtles, the Lotus, the Sun clan, the Moon clan, and the Foxy clan,
ooh,
or the Fox clan at least. All of these will have various miniatures. Mm. They'll have some daimos, or at least one daimo.
Daimo!
They'll have some Shintos, who are their religious spiritual characters, and they'll be able to go to shrines, which will become important.
Mm.
And then, what are they going to have, Mark?
They have the Bushi.
Correct.
Which, of course, Garth, comes from the word Bushido.
Meaning the grunts.
Yes.
Which are the ones who will do the hacking and the slashing more often than not, and also the dying.
So the Bushies enter to Damo.
Correct.
This game is so Australian.
Is it ever? So look, there is, man, these eight races, each of them have a very unique power, which on sitting down and looking at your player, you go, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And especially when you look at what you can do with your power, you go, expletive, yeah.
Yeah. I'll say.
And then you look at everyone else's and you go, no way.
Yeah.
Because every one of these clans will offer you a unique and so potentially game-breaking unique ability that you spend the first 5 or 10 minutes going, your clan does what?
Yeah, they are kind of crazy. We won't go through all of them, but some of the favourite ones we've come up with so far is the Turtle Clan.
Oh, look, the Turtle Clan is everyone's favourite.
Because they're shrines that are normally just sitting on the board. They're in the back of massive turtles and actually become warriors themselves that can move around the board.
Yeah.
And was it the Foxy Clan, the ones that didn't have to pay any money?
Oh, no, it was the Bonsai Clan.
Oh, the Bonsai Clan.
You just pay one.
Right.
You pay one coin for
everything you want to buy.
And that kind of maybe ties in nicely with some cards that you might get, which may offer you discounts, and you'll get so much stuff for nothing.
And the dragonflies can pretty much go anywhere because they're dragonflies and all that kind of stuff. So they're all, every ability is pretty cool.
And now, we should sort of refer back maybe to, because really there's two versions of this game, isn't there? There's the retail version. Which, do you guys know what it retails for?
No, well, it's not a thing yet, and we don't even know when it's going to be a thing.
But when it does come out, there's the retail version,
yep.
Lots of cardboard and some minis. And then there's the Kickstarter version, and I believe, is it the Sun and Moon Clan? They were an expansion?
Correct. Yep. So, yeah, the base game comes with six, but no one is playing the base game.
I don't actually know if the base retail will have those six.
No, it won't.
Because I think two of them are kind of extra ones as well. So you might just get just the four, I'm not sure.
So you buy a game that plays up to six and it only has four.
No, we're probably wrong then.
I thought it was going to have the six, but I thought it wasn't going to have the Sun and Moon Clan because all that extra content that you got as part of the Kickstarter that gives you lots of extra plastic, but also makes it cost a lot more. Yes. That's not going to be available in the retail version.
Yep.
So far, it's 7-16, and we've got to the eight factions in here.
Yep.
Now, you choose your factions, you sit round the table in the right order, you place your starting miniatures in your starting section of the feudal Japan map, of which it is broken up into eight pieces, obviously one per clan. You then start the game. Now, the game itself is really bloody simple, which I love. I love the fact that you look at the board and there's a big track that tells you how the game is going to play, which is wonderful. And I also like that the very first thing that you do in this game is that you make alliances.
Yes. You have the tea ceremony.
But before we just quickly get to that, you mentioned the board. Oh, what a board.
Oh, what a board, yes.
It is an incredibly beautiful looking board. The designers of Ethnos, if you're out there, which also happens to be the same company, mind you, this is a board. This is what a board should look like.
Yes, it should. And Ethnos just should not be.
No.
Anyway.
It could look like this if they wanted it to.
Yeah. So look, the game starts. Everyone places their cards on the honor track. You then start having your negotiations.
Yes.
And negotiations are where Come On tries to draw in this diplomacy sort of comparison, where it's really a situation where you go, hey, Mark, we're fine.
Hey, Gus.
Do you want to sort of tee up together and be okay and do some things and then we'll be fine and everyone will win and that kind of thing? And is that okay?
I hate you, but what's in it for me?
Well, you will see. Because after that, and no one really knows how the alliances work, especially in the first game, you're going to get to the first round of this game or the first part of the first season. Now, this is where the first really cool Kickstarter exclusive is, because you get 10 awesome little chunky tiles, which will tell you what political mandates there are.
Not so little. I mean, these are couple of inches at least.
Yeah.
And they're like massive, oversized mahjong tiles.
Almost the size of playing cards. Yeah. Not quite, probably two-thirds maybe. And you are going to have 10 of those, of which there are two copies of each of the five political mandates.
Yes.
These mandates are going to be what each player does on their turn. So a turn is going to be you take the top four political mandates in your that's available. Look at them secretly, choose one, put the three on the top, and then you will reveal that one face up, and everyone will get to do that action, starting with the player to your left, meaning that you, as the person who's chosen the action, are going to be the last one to be able to do it, with the exception of one of those political mandates.
And this is where I cried a little bit inside when I was finding out about the retail version. Is in the standard retail version, you don't get those big, chunky, oversized Mahjong tiles. You get eight bits of cardboard.
Correct, which is why...
And that, I mean, that picking up the four, holding them in your hand, fanning them out, clinking them like gambling chips.
Showing them to everybody, especially your ally, Mark.
Oh, Garth, that only happened once.
Yeah.
But that, just that, the feeling, the weight of those was so, was such a lovely part of the game.
Yeah.
Because you spend a lot of time thinking about, what do I want to do? These are the four actions I can choose. Who's after me? What are they going to choose? How's that going to affect me? You spend a lot of time thinking about those, and to have them in your hand while you're doing that, it was really nice. And to have that be just four bits of cardboard, I think that's really going to make the game suffer, I have to be honest.
Yeah, it didn't really bother me too much because I always knew what I wanted to do pretty quickly anyway. So
yeah,
because I'm a man of action.
I agree, and I sort of equate it to the very simple fact of whenever you're playing a game of Splendor, you'll have players there who will spend the whole game just clinking their little Splendor chips. Or when you're playing Nothing Personal and the joy that you get by putting on the Capo's ring and just fiddling with it while you're the first player. Oh, my God,
fair
it's
enough.
Good.
Yep.
So, look, these political mandates are the bulk of the game. There are...
Well, they're the actions. That's what they are.
Yeah, there are actions that will allow you to draw new figures onto the board and increase your army. There are actions that will allow you to move them across mythical or non-mythical feudal Japan. You can train and basically buy stuff, which is going to be cool. Mm. You can harvest, which is get some stuff and, most importantly, get some money because you'll need money to be able to buy season cards that we'll talk about in a moment. Or... you've just created these beautiful alliances. You can decide to betray them and screw over your ally. But maybe you're not just your ally.
No.
Screw over some other people as well, because you can take any two minis from two different factions off the board and replace them with your own.
Yeah, and obviously the first comparison to me with the mandate phase is something like Puerto Rico, where everyone gets to do the action for most of the things, but the person who picks the action, they get a special ability.
And this is
much the same.
This is where the ally really sort of comes into its own because, yes, you play the action, you get a special bonus, which might mean that where everyone can summon one figure to the board, you can get another one, or you might be able to build one of your strongholds, that those turtle things that you talked about for the turtle clan. Those strongholds are where you'll be able to basically bring up and summon new
like your bases
and bushes across the board. But yet, ally also gets that ability. Now, this is where forming those alliances can be an incredibly powerful part of the game, but so can be breaking them.
Yeah.
And we have already seen in the couple of games that we've played that alliances are made and broken with breakneck speed.
Yes, but they also, at the end of every season or every round, if you will, the alliances kind of reset anyway, so it's not really that big a deal if you break them. As you said, you can break the alliance without screwing over your partner too much, unless, Trent, you say, break that alliance, Trent, like the first action you do, Trent, which means then you don't get to have the benefit of your allies for the rest of that round.
No.
Because of reasons, Trent.
Well, yes. Now...
and the other thing I was going to say is we obviously, the second time we played, so you guys have played it twice, I've only played it once, was a five-player game. Alliances are twos, five players, two into five don't go. And so particularly because I was sort of coming from not having played anyway, but in that whole first round, not having an ally meant not getting any of those bonuses except only on the one turn that I got. I felt like that was a huge disadvantage. Now, clearly it wasn't because, spoiler alert, I just smashed you guys.
Oh,
but, you know, that to me, that played a huge part in that.
Yeah, and... well, this is the thing, and you just touched on it there, is that this game plays up to six, but every season, i.e. every round, there are only seven actions, which means that a lot of the time you are going to get one and precisely one opportunity to play the political mandate that is going to be benefiting you. Now, I love that. I love the fact that on your turn, you really have to think about what is best for you and best for your ally potentially, because it's going to be the only potential turn that you get for that whole season. And it is so, so, so critical. What also screws that up is because one of the clans, the first time you played Leon, yes. I can't remember the name of the clan, their special ability is to play any political mandate tile that they want face down and just say, oh, that's a train action.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be. So you never have an opportunity to know with 100% certainty what tiles are left that you'll be drawing
And I
from.
Use that to great effect by looking at everybody else on the board and going, I reckon they all want me to do this, so I'll take that completely out of play, put it face down, and then make it something else. And we do just quickly mention that the two times we have played this have been with five players each time.
Correct.
And most people would probably play this as four. I think that's generally the recommended. Or probably your big six, and it's going to take you a bit longer. But we played it at five both times.
Okay, now, we've still got quite a bit to talk about this game. There is a lot to talk about it. So let's take a quick break, come back, and talk some more. And while we do, I want everyone to think about walking into a gaming store, looking around at the pop vinyl Funkos and the graphic novels and the board games and the books and the posters and the jigsaws and everything else that could be in a board game. You've just walked into Area 52. Go and buy some stuff. We'll be back shortly.
That was Power Child with Big Sky, a Tassie act. I quite liked that song.
Well, there you go.
I am.
I'm sure they are happy for you.
I'm happy for them for putting out good music. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, proudly brought to you by Area 52. They have books, they have nice staff, they have board games. Go buy them. Garth!
Yes.
Rising Sun.
So we've talked about the factions briefly. We've talked about the political mandates that you can do briefly. Now, the thing is, there's only potentially up to seven actions in each season, and that's if you're maxing it out six players. After the third action, you then go into the Kami turn.
Right.
Now, the Kami are these additional gods, I guess, that you as a player can send your Shinto miniatures to. Now,
yes.
Shintos, each player only gets two of those, so they are limited.
Is it three?
Maybe. Let's say three. Now,
I think it's three.
And on one of the actions, which is the summon action, instead of summoning a Shinto to one of the strongholds that you might have on your board, you can instead summon a Shinto to the shrines.
Yes.
Now, this is where the Kami turn becomes evident, because the Kami's... Now, there are two different ways you can play. This is the base version, and there is the expansion version, which we are not going to talk about. But everyone who wins a particular shrine gets a little bonus.
So whoever was the most prayiest.
Exactly right. So there might be one that will say, whoever wins this shrine gets a victory point for each stronghold that they have, or you might be able to make a couple of move actions and move your characters around, which can be very important.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are good. It moves pretty quickly. And then you go into another couple of rounds of the political mandate. You then do another Kami turn. You then have one or two more actions, depending on the number of players. One more lot of Kami. So by this time, the whole board could have changed.
Yep.
Because new figures could have been deployed, new monsters could have come out, people could have moved around the board, people could have bought new seasons cards, which are cards that will give you permanent game-changing effects for your clan or for your figures. They might buff their strength, they might allow them to have unique abilities. All of those things happen in the space of these sort of seven actions per season. Leon, you've got your finger up.
I do. Just mentioning the monsters, they do something in this game which I think is very cool, and it's actually from Blood Rage as well, is that once you have that monster in your army, it's there forever.
Oh, so good.
It can be taken off the board, it can be killed, but you can then bring it back. And it's the same as Kemet as well. Once you have that creature, that's your creature for the duration of this game, which is, I think, because it's one of the draws of these type of games.
I've
got all these cool creatures that do all these cool things, and it would suck if, like, within the first, you know, round or something, someone plays a go-to-hell card, you lose it, and then you've lost it for the game. That kind of sucks. But you've got it, and you've got it forever.
Look, one of the main attractions for this game, and anyone who is in board gaming social media, particularly something like Instagram, this game is all about those miniatures, of which there are a squillion, billion, million, trillion, yeah, which is an exact term.
I mean, all the armies, there's lots of different minis for them, but like the monsters alone is like, I don't know, it's like 30 of them or something. Yeah,
and they're huge, yeah, and they're so intricate. And it's what you expect from Come On Games.
Well, I actually think they took it up a notch in this game with the level of detail from some of the other minis games they have. When you look at those things like the, was it the Tree of HR? Yeah. The one with all the heads on it or whatever.
Yeah.
And just the amount of detail in each of those skulls where there's about 50 skulls hanging from a tree. The flip side of that for me is, as someone who has painted a little bit of minis, I just look at these and go, I'm not even going to go near there because they're so detailed. Unless you did just like a simple wash or something like that, it's going to take you weeks to paint one of these.
But that's the thing. People who paint minis are addicted to it, and it is a hobby within the hobby of gaming. So this is crack.
If you're a hardcore painter, then you look at this and go, well, that's no deal. It's correct. Definitely happening.
Yeah.
So the minis, check them out on any of the social medias. They are all bloody fantastic.
But some on our Instagram feed, guys.
Indeed. Then we get to War.
What is it good for?
It is good for winning the game,
yes,
Mark.
It is.
Now, this is where I think it offers you a tense, exciting, and a really screw-overy way that war happens.
Yep.
Because it is played out in private and in secret all at the same time. And the way it works is that it goes in area by area, of which I've said there are eight on the board. You know at the start of every season the order in which these areas are going to be fought over, because there is always these little cards on the board that tell you which prefecture or province are going to be fought over, and there'll be some that won't be, which basically means they're dead, useless spaces. So why have you got your creatures in there? Get them out of there and get them fighting.
Mm.
So
it's because I have a plan.
Yeah.
Which won't work at all.
No, it was very unsuccessful. So war is going to start. Now, for the purposes of just talking about this, I'm just going to talk about war between two players.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about alliances and all that because there's rules in that.
Muddies the water.
So say I'm fighting Leon in a province and I've got three characters and Leon's got two. The base thing is they're each worth 1 point each, so I'm winning 3-2. There then might be some monster bonuses that come along with that if we've got some of our big bads in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then you go and have the real fight, which is where stuff becomes secret.
Mm.
You get these little what, player cards or whatever you want to call them that you hide all your stuff behind.
It's like a planning chart.
Where you've got the two main fighting currencies, which are money.
Mm. Yep.
And then Ronin, which you have earned during the course of the season, doing things, triggering abilities, and so on and so on. You have this little player board which has one, two, three, four different sections on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it'll work is that you'll first of all have to openly declare, I have this many monies, I have this many Ronin. The two people in the battle will declare that.
And I have to say straight away, I love that. It's all open information before it's then eyes down bingo time to plan. Are you going to use your own and are you going to use your coins? How? The bit you're going to explain now. But I love the open information because so many times with these games and you've got stuff hidden behind a screen, it comes down to, oh, Leon, he's young and his memory still works, so he knows what I've got behind my screen. But I'm old and I remember not things.
Yeah, but you also forget I pay no attention to anything you ever do.
But, you know, you don't want people to suffer because they haven't bothered to pay attention that Garth was putting two barrels of pitch behind his screen every turn or something.
And
like
also, everyone loves a hidden thing where you're supposed to put stuff on things and you just don't, so you're just pretending like you're putting things on.
You feel
it's
so
a great little fun. It's like you pretend like your hands
you
are little chickens.
Clink your little coins.
All right, look, we'll get to the big reveal. So on the board that you'll be secretly, yes, bingo style, placing coins on each of those things, and the coins are what you own. Whoever's going to, at the big reveal, have the most number of coins on that particular action will be the one that will get to do it. So the actions are, one, seppuku!
Yes.
Which is basically kill all the figures in the war,
uh-huh,
but you get a victory point and you get an honour.
Yes.
We haven't really talked too much about honour, but you get honour, which is basically higher up the track,
I mean,
which will determine who breaks ties.
Primarily it's a tiebreaker, although there are some of the Monsters in the Season cards that say if you're too high on the honour track, you can't do this, or if you're too low on the honour track,
you can't do this. It's very important.
It is. So, the first thing is you could commit seppuku. You could then try and take hostages, which mean you take one of the other player's figures. Now, some of them are immune to this condition, so you have to be aware of the players that are, sorry, the miniatures that are in each section, and they make it easy because the Damo, for example, is immune to this one, but you can tell because he's the one who's got the big black base around the miniatures, so you know that he's immune, but a lot of other characters are. It essentially means you take one of their characters off the war, it doesn't count anymore, and then you take one of the victory points from them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never keep a good Damo, do you?
No. The third action is then hire Ronin, which essentially means you can then add any of the Ronin tokens that you've got in your hand or in your collection to the fight.
Ronin being mercenaries, of course.
Of course, one Ronin equals one more strength. At the end of those three actions, the battle is resolved, and it is very simply a numbers game. Who has the biggest force?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's the biggest force, all their characters stay there. Whoever's got the smallest force, their figures all go off, except strongholds, which are permanently there. And figures that can't be removed, which they're expansion, so it doesn't really matter. You then have the battle is resolved, and only then do you calculate the fourth action, which is Imperial Poets. Sounds so lovely.
It does.
But basically it is, if you win this one, you get a victory point for each figure that has been killed in the battle.
Yes.
And there can be battles where there are half a dozen or more miniatures on either side, and there are battles where there are three or four players involved, and they could all choose to commit seppuku, which means they're killed. So you could be in there, put your money onto this one little Imperial Poets thing, and end up getting a dozen victory points. It's a huge...
Yeah, because that's the kind of beauty of this system. Much like Blood Rage, there is... things to be gained by having your soldiers killed off or even killing them off yourself. And there's lots of different ways you can do it. Like, we had one battle where I pretty much knew that if the other person won the Ronin section, I was screwed. So I put all my coin on that, even though I had no Ronin myself, just to stop them from doing
it. Of course.
Whereas other times I thought, they think I'm going to go all out and try to win this battle. I'm basically going to waste their coins and just put it on seppuku and Imperial Poets and just rack up the points that way. There's lots and lots of different ways to go about
it. And this, for me, was the part where you can really get into someone else's head. Yeah. Not only as the competitor in this fight that you might be having, but on the sidelines and basically doing table talk going, hey, Mark, Leon and Trent are about to have an argument. If you were Leon, what would you do? You would do that, I'd do this, and da-da-da. And the only way that you can win those points and do this is if Leon does that. But Trent's got enough coins to be able to do that. So you can get in each other's heads in all ways, shapes, and sizes.
Because something very important about these battles is the person that loses the battle, the coins they all put on their board, they all get put back in the bank.
Correct.
But the person that won the battle... all the coins that they put on their board go to the loser.
Losers.
Who may have another battle coming up very soon who needs the money. But also, I need to quickly mention, I won't harp on this, the battle system in this is pretty much identical to Cry Havoc, if anyone else has played that.
Oh, yes, we played it, didn't we?
Yeah, there's absolutely no way that they didn't look at Cry Havoc and go, ooh, that's a good idea, because it is so similar.
So this combat system I love.
Yeah,
I really enjoy it.
But better in this game,
And I love the fact that it moves pretty quick. I love the fact that, as you say, Leon, if I'm involved in conflict number one, and I know that I'm going to be involved in conflict number four and six as well, you can play the long-term strategy and you might have to forego an area to get another one, because ultimately the way that you will win the game is, with the most victory points, but you need to get... as many different provinces won over the course of the game, because it's one of these combinations where it doesn't matter if I win the same province three times, because there are three seasons, I only really get maximum benefit if I win that province once, then I win the province next to it, and the next province, and the next province, and the next province, because you want to be trying to get seven or eight different province tiles, because if you get... three or four, you might get 10 points in total. If you get five or six different province tiles, you might get 20 points. And if you get seven or eight, you get 30 points or more.
It's a huge amount of points.
So that's why the battles are constantly changing, because everyone might have won the first two or three without much conflict, but then they all have to start moving to the different areas, and that's where the real battles will start, generally in the second season.
Yeah, and there's not, it has to be said, there's not a huge amount of opportunities to move. You've only got those... couple of move actions you're going to get.
Yeah, the martial actions.
So because you want to get everyone out of, you've already won there. You don't need to be there anymore. So you're constantly moving around. The numbers are constantly changing. Then you're putting your coins down on the little war shield. That was, to me, was fascinating.
Correct.
And so many times I mean, I know we've already said it once, but I smashed you guys.
We haven't said that.
But I lost quite a few battles.
But you won the war.
Exactly. But because of where I placed my coins on the shield, you know, when I lost battles, I got a lot of victory points. When I won battles, I got a lot of victory points.
So anyway,
it just gives you a lot of opportunity to really mix it up.
Let's go to our thoughts. We've talked about this long enough. Look, it is very much a tactical game, not a strategic game.
Mm.
You are always making the very best decision that you can right now because God knows what's going to happen in 2 turns' time.
Yeah, the board state is constantly changing.
So it is not one of those games where you go, this is my strategy, I'm going to be doing this thing, then I'm going to be doing that, and then this and that, and I'll rely on my ally to do that, because your ally will screw you over. No one ever ally with Trent. I can't believe people still ally with Trent, because he just screws you over, guys. You should know that by now.
I knew he was going to screw me over. I just didn't realize he literally did it the first thing and the
in the game.
At the start. Like, so he got no benefit from our alliance whatsoever.
Well, except he got to place a couple of extra miniatures. Anyway.
Yes.
What do we think, guys?
It's brilliant. I absolutely love it. It is a worthy successor to Blood Rage. It is just as good, if not better, which is all that I can ask for. And
so
are
you going to get it?
I am going to get it. But, yeah, I just... No, you're throwing me off my track now. You clown, you. Anyway, but I like the fact that, as you said, the rules in this game, kind of similar to Blood Rage, ain't complicated at all. It took us a while to play it, but that's just because of the way we play. So the reason it took us a while is because, not even so much in the decision-making, it was just the banter and the talk, and we could do this if you do that, and I could do this and screw you over. And that's fun, because that's an enjoyable time spent as opposed to sitting there thinking about the complicated rule time spent. That's not for me, and I know for this day and age is not for a lot of people. So, I can't recommend it. It's a game of the year by far, by a mile.
Well, I am not, for the most part, a dudes on a map man, you know? None of my favourite games are dudes on a map.
Or dudettes.
I'm not including Gloomhaven because that's totally different.
And Inish, which you love.
You know I hate that game. So I almost played this against my better judgment, but I thought, I've got to see what it's like. Not just because I totally smashed you guys.
For the love of.
But I really enjoyed it. And I think it is, Garth, as you said, it's because it's tactical and not strategic. Because I know there are people out there who love to plan 3, 4, 5, 10 turns in advance. I don't, because my brain can only hold one turn at a time. So it's really all about look at the board state, make a decision, move on. Forget about it. I mean, yes, you observe what's happening, but you can't plan too much because by the time it comes back to you, it's changed again so much. And the battle system with the coins, I loved it because if you find yourself in a bad situation, there are things you can do with your coins to change that situation or at least not give every advantage away. And with the order of the battles, you can look and go, well, I've got battle one, but then I've got battle seven, so I'm going to throw battle one, get a heap of money so that I can win battle seven. So I was so surprised because I wasn't enamored with Blood Rage. I really, really, really enjoyed this, and I would highly recommend people check it out and at least get one of the people in your group to get it because I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I agree. It's a great game. It would be my second favourite come-on game behind the Grizzled.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the games themselves are completely worlds apart.
Yes.
But it is the game that I think come-on deserves to make.
Yep.
It is so much fun. I'll happily sit down and play it. It's rules light. It is fun. It is quick. And you can pack a lot of game into 2 hours.
And the replay of this is just through the roof.
Exactly.
This game you could easily be playing for years and years and years.
Okay, we will be back in a minute to talk about all the things you can spend your money on Kickstarter. And don't forget Area 52
as well.
Well, that was Sloane Peterson with Rats!
Peterson!
You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Leon!
Hello!
What do you want to talk about?
I wanted to talk about the awesome competition that we're running at the moment. So as we've mentioned on the show before, we're big fans of MortalCon, or BorderCon, if you will.
Correct.
And this year we will be going yet again and are looking forward to it. So we have got two tickets for that very much packed event to give away to our beautiful listeners. And all they have to do is simply this. They have to send us, in some form or another, what game they would love to play at BorderCon with the Dice Men. You can do this however you want. You can send us. We've had some videos. We've had some audios. We've had some emails. We've had some pictures. We've had a few different things. We've had lots of cool entries. But we want more of them. We're going to run this competition for another week at least, maybe another two. We'll see how we go, because we want to give you guys your travel plans. So tell us all the information you possibly can and send it to our Facebook page, which if you're not a member of, what are you doing for the love of God? Because we will chat to you any damn day of the week if you want to.
Indeed.
Or our Instagram or our Twitter or our Gmail, which is dicemencometh@gmail.com, or our website. But the Facebook one is probably the one we use the most, and we will talk to anybody, as I said, anytime.
And hurry up, because you're running out of time.
Yes, exactly.
Mark.
Garth.
Go.
Kickstarter.
You have 10 minutes.
All right. So starting with the Aussie Kickstarters first.
Oi, oi, oi.
Look, sad to see that Above Top Secret, we talked about it very briefly, mostly not at all. It got pulled.
Yep.
They got about 25% funded. Look, it's a great-looking game. Hopefully it'll come back and we'll get a chance to talk about it then.
Yeah, look, the art is great. A couple of issues, I think, with the rules. Wasn't quite clear when we tried to look at it. We gave some feedback to the designer. That's fantastic. Hopefully they...
Yeah.
Go back, lick their wounds, and make a better game.
And Kickstarter is an absolute awash at the moment, as Mark will tell us in a second. So it's got nothing to do with the quality of the game that they've gone. It's just a smart thing to do, I think. They could probably put it up again in a month and be laughing.
Yeah. Now, one we did talk about the other week, War of Supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been going a little while. It's got 21 days to go. It's cracked the 50%.
Yep.
So just over 6,000 of the 12 it's after. Obviously, most Kickstarter funding is done first couple of days, the last couple of days.
Yeah.
I think it's going to get there, but the problem is now with all these other big ones coming on, it may struggle a little bit. So if you're out there, you want to support a great Aussie Kickstarter.
And it's definitely worth it. This is a game I would recommend, and I probably will end up backing myself. And there is some stuff on the Kickstarter page that we put up there ourselves.
Correct.
Yes. A nice little link to the chat we had about it and a nice little picture of Garthy face.
Wow. Every picture of me is a nice Garthy face.
Another Australian one is Jungle War by Claff Games from Melbourne. A very new one. Now, this one had a slow start. Only 2,000 of the 12,000 thereafter. 29 days to go. Now, it does have some nice sort of kiddie animal art. But it's basically $25 for a pack of nice cards.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about it having three modes. One of the modes is memory.
Okay.
With the card. With a slight wrinkle. But again,
you know, I'm wrinkling the cards.
Look, this is clearly not. This is no. There's no wrinkles in the cards. This is clearly not a game aimed at a gamer audience. It's aimed at kids, I think. So I want to give them benefit of the doubt. But $25 Australian for a pack of cards plus $10 shipping. And the video doesn't actually say anything about the game. It just says, hey, we wanted to make a game about animals. Here's some Nature Channel footage of animals.
Okay.
And more animals. We'll see, I guess.
Yep.
Another Australian one. We're just awash with Aussies. Castles of Kalera. Now, this one is a mini game, 18 to 20 cards, and we actually played this in the pub tonight.
We did.
You can't help but compare it to something like Love Letter with the 18 cards. But basically, you're building a castle in front of you with these cards where you're basically putting cards down in front of you, face up or face down. The cards have special abilities a la Love Letter. As I said, this one has just launched. 26 days to go. Again, slow start. 1.6 thousand of the 7.2 thousand thereafter. And again, like, we're talking 18 cards, $24
wow,
plus $12 shipping for an 18-card game. Now, look, we played it. It's fair to say it didn't set the world on fire.
It's fine, though.
It was a little bit of fun. But just, look, people are willing to throw a lot of money at Kickstarters, as we've seen, and we're going to talk about one in a minute. But don't go crazy. I mean, let's compare this with our friend Tanya with the Lady and the Tiger.
Yep.
40 absolutely, might have even been more than 40, beautiful beautifully illustrated, original illustrations from someone who used to work for Disney. It's yeah. that high quality.
A Disney artist with 40 cards.
$8.
$8.
And maybe, I don't know if they charged for shipping.
I can't remember, but it weren't much.
Okay. Couple more quick Aussie ones. Look, great to see that Good Society, the Jane Austen role-playing game, it's about to finish, but it smashed it out of the park. They were going for $4,000. They've made over 100,000.
Wow. Nicely done.
And the final Aussie one, Body Count.
Ooh.
An over-the-top, read hyper-violent, cyberpunk role-playing game. I love the video for this. A guy comes on and says, I want to talk to you about my game. It's got unicorns. And then this big guy, bearded guy, comes on and goes, no more unicorns! Pushes him out the way and starts to talk about his game. The video sort of went downhill from there. But, hey, look, give it a shot. If you're into your cyberpunk role-playing, it's almost 50% funded. It's still got 17 days to go. Look, guys, I've got a heap more to talk about, but I'm going to save them till next week, except for...
Yeah.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Batman!
Yeah. So it is launched, and it is going relatively successfully.
Well, it's only been one and a bit days.
And it has raised how much?
2.8 million Australian.
And as we said in the pub, so that's from six backers only, because this game is a tad on the expensive side.
Only if you want the game. If you want a bit of the game, it's... It's only still expensive. Well, but if you want the whole game.
The base game is $140 US.
Yes. Shipping about $20-$30, which is nice.
They're going to add the shipping on at the end of the thing.
About $20 or $30 US Australian.
But there's only two pledge levels.
Yep.
The other one, the all-in pledge, $320 US. Oh, my. That's over 400 Australian.
410.
Plus shipping.
So it'll be about 460 altogether at the end of the day.
Oh, my goodness.
But Leon calls that... his retirement.
I don't want to spend that much, but I'm very much... Because there are things in this game... The miniatures are obviously amazing. I mean, and Batman has the best fictional universe, I'd think, possibly ever. That's just my
opinion.
Except
mythical feudal Japan.
That's true. The player boards in this, I don't like the look of. Some of the art is a bit... even though they've got 70 years of amazing art to go from. But this is a game with all the scenarios in it that you could have for years. And I even said to Garth, as someone that has no kids, something I could probably play with if I ever have a son in like 15 years' time, because you've got enough stuff in there. So we'll probably talk about it more, but it's a shame that it's that much. But
oh, look, people need to invest in plastic-making companies.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the money is at. I'm deciding to cash in my super and then just invest it in plastic mould.
What is it? Four expansions in the... there's an expansion in the... base game, but then there's four other expansions in the other one.
And most of them look like pretty much must-owns, I must admit, from what... There's one that's got the Batmobile in it, which is, it's a Batmobile, but it's $35 US, so like $60 Australian, for something you can use in like two missions. And there's some things with extra dice for $15 US, and the game already comes with 20-odd dice.
It's almost like they're trying to make more money, but we don't really have much more time to talk about Batman.
Well, there's always time for Batman.
The only thing I am going to personally say about my thoughts about this is... Nah, 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 nah.
Oh.
Nah, nah.
Ha, 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 ha.
Leon, as a massive Batman fan, there is no way you can't back this. But can you get the base game and add other bits on?
I can, but there's like three of those expansions I want, which I think might save me maybe $100. Yeah. But and that's what I think I'm probably going to have to
$100, Mudred's Marks. Just get it off Bruce Wayne. You'll be fine. That is all the time we have for this week, which is episode 202.
Yep.
Thank you so much to Area 52 for your sponsorship of another amazing show, as I must say.
I can't wait to come back next week and talk about our friends from Sweden again, Tingle Touch Games. They're back with more.
Okay.
But you'll have to wait.
You will have to wait and listen. I've been Garth. That's been Leon.
I've been Mark.
We are the Dice Men Cometh, and we will see you...
Thanks so much, Area 52.
...next week.
Bye, Mal.
Bye. Who was that?
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.